This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
June 21st is the summer solstice. It's also National Aboriginal Day. This year, the people of Skidigit on Haida Gwaii chose June 21st to hold an end-of-mourning ceremony. The ceremony was held to honor the remains of ancestors returned from museums across North America. Over 700 people participated and witnessed the ceremony. Nika Collison is with the Skidigit Repatriation and Cultural Committee. She joins me on the line this morning from Skidigit. Good morning, Nika.
Good morning, Lisa.
So can you tell us what happened at the end of mourning ceremony?
Well, the end of mourning ceremony was held because over the remains of over 466 of our Haida ancestors have been returned back to Haida Gwaii from various institutions and private citizens from across North America. Over half of those ancestors are buried in our cemetery in Skidigit, the other half in Masset. And part of the Haida tradition is once a person, a loved one, is laid to rest at a later date, an end-of-mourning ceremony needs to be held in order to allow their spirit to continue on to the other side, to the spirit land, so they can rest. So on June 21st, we thought it would be a good day to allow the spirits of the ancestors to rest, to end the public and mourning and grieving for not only their loss of life, but for how their remains were treated afterwards. We began the day with a food burning to feed our ancestors, and then there was a procession to our graveyard where the grave markers were unveiled, the memorial plaques honoring our ancestors. Later in the evening, there was a feast, and that's where we all shared food, and then there was an end of mourning ceremony with a spirit dance that officially signifies that that stage is done and the celebrations began.
It sounds like this ceremony was the end of a long process. When did this process of repatriation of remains begin?
It began in the very early 90s. I wasn't a part of it at that time. The director of our Haida Gwaii Museum was new to the islands, and the community, the Haida community of both Skidigit and Old Masset, were going to her, to Natalie McFarland, saying, "We feel that the previous curator from this museum, who'd since moved on, has taken some of our ancestors' remains from burial grounds. We've been hearing stories, and we want you to look into it." And on top of that, some of the objects that were in the museum were missing. So Natalie had to deal with the RCMP, and eventually these boxes came by mail, and when they opened them, they weren't expecting. What happened was a whole bunch of bones came tumbling out.
And how did you even go about finding out where the ancestral remains were to begin with?
Well, shortly after that, it became apparent, you know, that we knew there were other remains in museums, not just from private citizens. And so Natalie and the Old Masset Heritage Resources up in Masset as well began a letter-writing campaign, and summer interns were hired to research museums and other institutions such as archaeology labs around the world and begin writing letters asking for information on the Haida collections they may hold, as well as if they had any ancestral remains. And that's been going on since the early 90s as well. Over 300 letters have been written to date, and we have information on over 100 museums, and it's from that information that we've been able to bring home over 400 of our ancestors.
What was the reaction of the museums when you first began approaching them?
Well, I didn't join this movement until 1999, but even at that time, there'd only been a couple of formal repatriations, and at that time it's a scary process for the museums and for ourselves. This is a really quite an abstract endeavor when you think about it, to be dealing with your ancestors, remain someone who could be your great-great-grandmother, and you're trying to bring a part of her back home. And from the museum's point of view, they're scared because while not all remains were removed from Haida Gwaii by theft, some were by people turning in found remains to the RCMP, most were by unethical collectors that were up here in the late 1800s and early 1900s. So the museums are carrying this legacy of grave robbers, and yet it's not the contemporary museum people who did this, but there's still that fear of how things might unfold. But from our end, we really, really believe that this is a partnership. We approach museums to work in repatriation as a partners, not to crucify anybody. The people of today on both museums and ourselves have that ability to make the wrongs better, to right them. So that's been our approach, and because of that, their initial fear really quite quickly goes away, and we get to know each other well, and the repatriations wind up being a really voluntary, happy time. And then we often have other partnerships and projects that follow.
I understand that a number of people from Haida Gwaii travel to the museums to pick up the remains. Why is that?
Well, we do our repatriation of our ancestors based on what our elders tell us. We go to them for guidance, and we hold a lot of community consultations because this is something new. This isn't an age-old tradition. There's a lot of committee members that work very, very hard at this, not just a couple of people. And beyond our committee, there's the community who works very hard to provide us with guidance. And it is they who said you don't have your ancestors sent home in boxes through the mail. If you know that they're coming home, you go get them like you would a loved one who recently passed away. You go get them and you bring them home with honor and respect. So for one person to go and get, you know, for example, from the Chicago Field Museum in 2003, we brought home the remains of 160 ancestors, and it's not as simple as flying to Chicago and putting them in a box and flying home. There's a lot of ceremony that is necessary to be performed as the ancestors are prepared individually to be brought home. And that requires a large delegation of people bringing different skills to the table, from singers to Haida speakers to spiritual leaders. There's a whole group that is needed in order to really pay respect to our ancestors.
Do you think that the institutions, the museums, and the collections learned about who the Haida are as a result of these ceremonies?
Oh, completely, yes. I mean, we really want, when we work with the museum, we want them to want to do what they're doing. We want them to want to give us our ancestors back. And in order for them to do that, they need to understand who we are and why we do what we do. So we're very happy to explain what we can about why we need to do a food burning. For example, in New York, where, you know, the American Museum of Natural History borders on the Central Park, and at first they were saying there is absolutely no way you can have a food burning outside. Can't you use a hibachi? and we said, oh, no, we can't do that. This is how it has to be. And we took great pains and a lot of time to explain it to them, and they were more than happy to sit and listen, and eventually we were able to do a proper food burning for our ancestors in order to begin the rest of the ceremonies. So sometimes one simple part, which seems so obvious to us, can take a couple of days of communication in order for other people to understand.
What then happens to the remains when they return to the islands?
When we bring home ancestral remains, we're greeted by a welcoming group of people from our communities, and immediately there's a tea held in order to mark the bringing home of our ancestors. In Haida culture, in a lot of Northwest Coast culture, there's always a feast or a potlatch or a tea to mark different events, because we're an oral culture and things need to be conducted publicly. So when we get home, there's a tea, and then the following, and then someone stays with the ancestors wherever they're safe kept. And the following day, the ancestors are transferred from the crates that they were brought home in to bentwood boxes, which is our traditional way of laying someone to rest. So part of the preparations is our men make, you know, as many bentwood boxes as there are individuals coming home. And that, of course, as well, is permeated with a lot of ceremony. The transferring of the ancestors into the boxes requires more prayers and more songs and more things that are done behind closed doors in order to ensure that we're doing the right thing for our ancestors. Once they're in their bentwood boxes, then there's a reburial, as it's called, because all of these people had previously been buried and their graves had been desecrated. So this is a reburial, and it's again an event that is marked by public attendance and participation. And they are in any ancestors that originated from the lower half of Haida Gwaii are buried in Skidikit. Any ancestors that originate from the upper half of Haida Gwaii are buried in Masset. So in our case, the ancestors are buried in the Skidikit cemetery rather than the villages they originated from. And this was a decision made by our chiefs a long time ago to ensure that they do not get taken again from these remote villages that can't always be monitored.
How do you think this work has benefited the community as a whole?
Oh, it's benefited our Haida community in so many ways, and our islands community, but beginning with the Haida community, in order to really, really do things respectfully, we really had to call on our ancient teachings and knowledge and traditions. And because these ancestors don't know anything but the old ways, of course, they lived in, you know, hundreds of years ago. So that's made a larger portion of our community relearn our old ways, and that's brought more people to learn our songs and dances and to learn about our ceremonies and to relearn ancient burial techniques and traditions that may not have otherwise been used any longer. And it brings our community together as a whole, because, as I said before, there's a committee that does a lot of the legwork, but we could do all of it without our entire community coming together in learning and conducting traditional ways. So that's been wonderful, and the children get involved in school. They're doing weaving, and they learn about bentwood box making and Haida design, because the boxes are painted with Haida crests, and they make small button blankets to wrap our ancestors in. So everyone's involved, from the youngest child to the eldest elder. And then, aside from a lot more people turning to tradition, the fact that our ancestors at one point had been buried with proper ceremony, their graves were desecrated, and that can only create unhappy spirits and unhappiness in ourselves, in our deepest selves. So when our ancestors are brought home and they're finally laid to rest, that heals ourselves, and it heals something more than what we know we can put our finger on.
I want to return to where we started the conversation with the end of mourning ceremony. What did that ceremony mean to you personally?
Oh, it meant so much. It meant 10 years of our community working hard to bring home over 400 of our relatives. It meant that a huge, huge milestone had been reached, and we'd done everything we could to pay respect to the people who we come from, and these people who left us this legacy of being Haida, this wonderful legacy. So in order to do this final step and know that these ancestors' spirits are now at rest and they can rest, you know, just it just meant so much. It just felt really good for to know that they're resting and to see our community rest as well.
Well, thank you so much, Nika, for joining us and telling us about this important milestone.
Thank you very much.
I've been speaking with Nika Collison. She's with the Skidegit Repatriation and Cultural Committee. She spoke to us this morning from Skidegit on Haida Gwaii.